I think you're winning the gray battle here, though. Like, aren't you older, or does he just look better?
No, he looks way younger than me. I'm 40.
How old are you?
48.
Jeez.
You're 48 years old, bro? Is everything okay? No wonder you were looking for Advil earlier.
I got it for Benny.
What's up, everybody? Thank you for supporting the Pohata Podcast. This is a show where we talk about jiu-jitsu with jiu-jitsu people, very often black belts. This time around, with the help of Darren Homey, I'm talking with Aaron Benesh. We call him Benny. As you'll learn about midway in the episode, he was recently promoted to brown belt in jiu-jitsu, but he's one of those guys that's been around a long time and trained under a lot of different people, and that has helped to inform a good and diverse teaching style. You can catch him teaching and taking classes now at both Hamel Jiu-Jitsu and the Academy Plymouth, where he received his belt from John Castaneda. This is one of those little bit scattered episodes, but stick with it because there's some gems. Of course, before we jump in, it is brought to you by Way of the Tiger Soap Company, a small local business created by one of us. You may not be good at jiu-jitsu, but you can smell good at jiu-jitsu. It's also, of course, brought to you by Hamel Jiu-Jitsu, where we did the recording. And again, let's shout out the Academy Plymouth. And without further ado, my conversation with Benny. I was hoping we could make fun of the fights last night or whatever, but I don't want to spoil it for you.
We can't spoil it.
The show is more important than my spoiler alert. Anything for the show.
Disappointing amount of ground in the Gaethje Holloway fight.
Disappointing amount of ground?
Yeah.
Was there any?
Don't you think?
You mean zero?
It was a kickboxing fight.
Did you think there's going to be ground?
Anytime MMA, I'm always like, all right, it's going to hit the ground at some point. We're going to get to watch some action. And
is Gaethje, what's his background? Is he a wrestler?
Wrestler.
But he turned into a striker?
The brawler.
Striker. Yeah, right. You can kind of tell he wasn't as polished.
But he's a
not giving any of the way.
Monster. He's known for just leg kicking people until they give up.
Oh, okay.
Like he did that in PFL.
You nailed it. Pretty close. You nailed it. Now, again,
and Max,
we're approaching spoilers. I don't want to do it to you.
Well, but I know Max has a boxing stance. He's heavy on the front foot.
You didn't watch the fight?
I would just say you probably picked off that foot, lead leg.
Yeah. Don't get on social media until you watch
the
fight.
I know. I stay off of Instagram.
That's funny.
All that stuff.
Yes, I mean, it's just too bad. Not to do the grumpy old man thing, but it's just too bad that it runs so late. Because I can't make it. I'm a pussy. My God.
You're still young.
No, I was old when I was young. But just an early riser, too, both for work and kind of naturally. So, like, yeah, it's like, all right, there's three more fights. And you're like, it's 11:30. How's there three more fights? You're going to play 15 minutes of promo in between each of them.
Yeah,
just grumpy. Grumpy bullshit. It's just me being a whiner. All right, boys, let's do it official. What do you think?
Start now.
Start right now? Cut out all that?
Use whatever you want.
Like last week's episode, we're about 10 minutes in. Morgan's like, all right, should we do introductions and get started? And I'm like, we've been recording for like half an hour, bro.
You're like, we're it's almost
going.
Done.
Yeah. It's going.
And it was Sam from Ronan over in Wisconsin.
Oh, you finally got Sam
so
on?
So he was kind of going off. So I'm going to leave it as is or whatever. Just let it be what it is.
Like Sam.
Benny, you're a part of this place. We're here in the hallowed halls of Hamel Jiu-Jitsu.
Yes, sir.
A.K.A. the Tower, according to Coach Eric. Is that what you guys call it, the Tower?
That's what we call it, yep.
Yeah.
Sounds cool.
It doesn't sound as cool as Hamel Jiu-Jitsu. But I'm Jiu-Jitsu bias over wrestling because wrestling...
The building's the Tower.
Yeah, I know. The address.
The address. The address is literally the Tower. The Tower,
yeah. What's your part in it there, Benny?
I was lucky enough for Darren to let me do Nogi Fundamentals every Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. So.
Just Wednesday?
Just Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Rest is
just Nogi.
Yeah.
You know me.
What's the deal with that?
He's allergic to the Gi.
The deal is, it's a complex question. I did 50-50, you know, Gi and Nogi, probably for the first 4 or 5 years of my journey.
I'm about 5 years in, and I've done like 7 no-gi classes ever.
So I try to do 50-50. All my coaches said that's
the
proper way.
Sure.
But then over time, I just, you know, I'm getting older. I want to do what makes me happy, and that is not the gi.
That is kind of the opposite of what I hear people say relative to getting older, though.
Yeah. Darren says, as Father Time catches me, I will put the gi back on so I can slow people down.
Slow those young kids down.
I think you're winning the gray battle here, though. Like, aren't you older, or does he just look better?
No, he looks way younger than me. I'm 40.
How old are you?
48.
Jeez. You're 48 years old, bro? Dang. Is everything okay? No wonder you were looking for Advil earlier.
I got it for Benny.
But anyway, so you just prefer the no-gi thing?
Yeah, I don't get the gi. I don't get it. I know that's not popular. No, you guys love it.
You don't get it, like, technically, or you don't get it from, like, a what's the draw?
Yes.
Both?
Both. The draw, like, to me, I'm like, it is constricting. It is warm. It is uncomfortable.
It's definitely all of that shit.
It is slow.
Can't deny any of that.
It is, I can't watch it either. Not close enough. I mean, like Eddie Bravo, he's like, he can't watch it. When he said that, I felt that.
The prophet Eddie Bravo spoke to you.
I know he's a polarizing character, but
in the conspiracy world, we refer to him as the prophet Eddie Bravo.
So. Yeah.
Just it's slow and unentertaining is what you're saying.
Yes. And probably, you know, we don't like doing things that we suck at. So I feel like I'm not as great technically with all these handles and getting slowed down. And I think I'm an athlete before a grappler. So I like a little bit faster, a little bit more explosive, even though I'm an old man.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
It does make a lot of sense.
Well, you move pretty well too. Still.
Thank you. For now.
For now.
As I pop another Advil around.
In amongst current company, you move pretty well.
Everything's relative. Yeah. We're just saying.
A 50-year-old man, a fat guy, and then you. Do you feel like it's rougher on the body, though?
It's definitely.
That's what you hear people say. Forgive me. Go ahead.
Like no-gi rougher overall?
Yeah. Because just faster, more tumbly, more slippery.
I mean, that's what people say. But I mean, when I do gi, I feel like I'm more exhausted. My fingers and hands are so tired. I've seen those pictures of dudes who do gi for like 20 years and they're mangled and gross. I'm like,
Joao, whatever.
I don't want that. I don't want to be deformed. No offense. No offense, guys.
And I think there's actually merit to what you're saying too. As a guy that kind of lands in like deep half and quarter guard and stuff with like lapel grips, and I'm just like deliberately underneath other human beings as they're grabbing my collar and like fisting into my throat.
Yeah.
It's like, no gi's rougher? Well, not according to my chin right now, you know, guarding right from a choke with a collar.
Gi burn and all that stuff. No, thanks. I gotta avoid that.
I think personally, I actually would like no gi better, but it just never works with my schedule.
How about Wednesday?
It's like literally.
How about Wednesday night?
So, and I'm gonna add an addendum to this. Like, it's historically never worked with my schedule in terms of like which days are best for me to train relative to my work schedules and this and that, except for absolutely right fucking now, when I could train literally whenever I want and I still only show up on gi days. It's just a comfort zone thing, I think.
Why do you guys think it's more popular? I mean, with like hobbyists and with people who train, I feel like gi still has bigger tournaments, bigger open mats. I mean, we just had an open mat here and I was the dork with the no-gi sitting off to the side. Why is it more popular in your guys' opinions?
I think it's just traditional and most academies start there. I mean, there's a lot more that are starting out now that are just exclusively no-gi, obviously. That's happening. But I think it's probably just more traditional. I think the no-gi is more appealing to a younger crowd, though, and that's why you're seeing a lot of these academies pop up that are exclusively no-gi.
Is that happening more? Because I don't know of many academies that are just besides like 10th Planet stuff.
I think some are converting, but I do think there's definitely more non-10th Planet no-gi academies.
Yeah, 10th Planet seems to just constantly be growing. There isn't a lot popping up around here by any means, but it seems like I regularly see posts about yet another new one. I think you nailed it. It's a legacy thing. Like, the guy that's coaching me now learned from guys who it was a gi, and that's what it was.
Right.
We're close enough to the inception, quote unquote, right?
Right.
But I mean, the Saturday morning open roll at M Theory is now not just gi. It's gi, no gi, or you can drill, kind of a more of an open mat type of vibe. The Friday role at Eden Prairie is exclusively no gi. You know, I mentioned I chatted with Sam from Ronin. His gym is almost entirely no gi.
I think it's weird to see a guy in a gi there.
It's small changes, like, well, all right, maybe we'll loosen up this class, and okay, we'll change that one, and yeah. I heard my guy down the road is changing this, you know. That's how it happens, which is why it's still so popular, mostly gi, because that's how it happens, is tiny little changes.
Do you think that's the inevitable because of, like, UFC Fight Pass and all these, like, little mini pay-per-views of these super cards? It's, like, it's so much more no-gi now. People are watching it. That's why they're getting into it. That and UFC growth?
It has to be. You keep wrestlers better in no-gi. Mm-hmm. Wrestlers get frustrated and quit because they're people hanging on to collars and stuff.
Besides Darren.
I stood up with Darren one time in my whole life. Yeah, and it's terrible. I took a collar grip with, like, Mr. Bench Press stiff arm, and I'm like, you're not. Whatever you're thinking of doing, there's no way, brother. It's not happening. And then I pulled guard like a loser.
You know. Standing up with Darren is bad idea.
Right. But it's like there's the wrestling pedigree. But there again, if I can wrap a lapel around your arm across your face and then grab a pant leg, like, that's just way outside of what you spent the last 5-8 years doing.
Right.
And you'll dominate in 6 months if you stick around. But don't people probably get, you know, like, it's not wrestling.
Yeah.
No gi's wrestling.
One of the benefits of Hamel is we have a lot of wrestler transplants or young bucks from Wayzata High School coming in here because they're in the program. And that's been fun because just as I try to grow as a grappler, it's like I'm starting from the feet all the time the last 2 years. And that's thanks to Hamel and all these young bucks.
That's why I only show up to open mat when it's in the gi. Jesus.
Yeah. Sit down.
How many times are you landing a day? Gross.
Just pull guard.
But I think the 10th Planet thing is an anomaly in terms of change of culture, because Bravo's a nut job.
Yes.
He's like, nope, that's what I want to do. We're going to do it. Oh, we're going to change all our tournaments into slap fights. Cool. We're going to do it. And everybody's like, okay. I said, you sure? And he just does stuff. That's why it works, because he's a nut job. And I mean that, like, affectionately, partly, right? But like for the rest of us, it's the rest of gyms, it's those small changes. Like jiu-jitsu made UFC, right? It's the whole legacy thing. But then when's the last time somebody was in the octagon with a gi on?
It's been a while.
You know, it's basically the first two or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think it's one of those things where it's got to be changing, because where you see the coolest application of jiu-jitsu is in tiny spandex shorts. Slippery, sweaty men punching each other.
Sounds really cool there. Put it that way.
I disagree.
Darren's like, this podcast sucks right now.
Yeah. I'm glad I forgot to hit record. Do you have a coaching philosophy?
Not like one that I have written down or tattooed on me, but...
Let me back you up. A quick second. You coach other stuff too, right?
Yeah, I've been a basketball coach for a long, long time. Basketball is my first love. Sorry to my wife, but it is my first love.
You knew basketball first.
I did.
You can't fix that.
Yeah. It was my first tattoo I got. Little basketball on
super douchey.
String bean shoulder.
Super douchey. You got the basketball tattoo?
Now it's like buried within a full sleeve, but yeah, it's...
And you cover it with a gi. It's pretty tattoo. Sweet. Just a tattoo of a gi.
I still don't want to put a gi on, even if it's to the cover. But yeah, basketball was... I was going to say, this is kind of historic for your podcast. It's your first basketball player on.
That we know of. Right? I probably never asked, because who gives a shit?
I mean, I still consider myself a basketball player pretending to be a grappler. You know what I mean? Or a basketball player acting like a grappler. I know that sounds weird, but it's like, I don't know. Yeah, I've coached hoops for a while.
It's part of the athlete first thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Explode, move, change directions.
And maybe I'm just saying that to like cover bad technique, but athlete first. Then... Oh, grappler. Matt just poured his coffee out all over the table.
It's a milkshake. It's not coffee. Oh. It's a hot-ass milkshake. Gotcha. We'll be all right. I'll grab a paper towel.
I thought it came from the ceiling.
Does how you've coached kids in basketball inform the way you teach jiu-jitsu at all? This is a curious thing for me, because we get on these mics and everybody's jiu-jitsu, and I know they've coached other stuff, but I'm always curious, like, how's the process compare?
Well, it's a really good question, and I think a deep question too. But of course, there's parallels with coaching in all sports. You know, trying to empower students in every way, whether it's on the court, on the mats, in the ring. You know, I was a little known fact. I was a boxing instructor for a short time in my life as well. So I think the main huge underlying premise is always promote with positivity and kindness and try to make good people, whether it's on the court, on the mat, in the ring, or my job. As you know, I'm a second grade teacher, so I'm working with 28 little crazy kids.
Yeah, that's the real violence.
That's what's really hard. Yeah.
How'd you end up a boxing coach? Did you box? Let's throw that out there since you mentioned being a boxing coach.
I sparred in a ring. Yeah. I didn't have any judged fights.
Sure.
So off season when I played basketball for Augsburg University, tried to stay in shape.
Subtle brag. Cool.
Basketball. tried to stay in shape so I wouldn't vomit a ton during the first week back at practice. And upper Midwest champs in North Minneapolis said they'd train me for free. I had no idea what I was doing. I showed up, moved fresh from Wisconsin here, and went and learned how to box. So that was pretty cool. They had a fight lined up for me at Canterbury Park, and they said the date is August 27th, and I was getting married that day, so I said, I cannot take that fight. And that was it. That was kind of the end of my
career. The wife's above boxing. She might not be above
She's above everything now, for sure.
Yes.
She's going to listen.
Yeah. She's not listening to this.
I think she might.
Can you hear me winking? What was the name of the boxing gym?
It's called Upper Midwest Champs.
Okay, I thought you said that, yeah.
What was really cool about it was a Native American business building, and in the depth downstairs, as you followed the horrible smell, it was a full ring and treadmills and boxing. It was old school Native American dudes who were coaching that just trained me for free, got me licensed as a light heavyweight amateur boxer. It was so cool.
Yeah.
I thought I was so tough.
You were a light heavyweight amateur boxer.
Sort of. I have a little cool license to prove it somewhere, but.
Yeah. It's one of those don't look into it, but.
Yeah. Don't look at my record. I was 0-0.
Right. Wait, that gym's not around anymore.
Huh? No, I went back like 10, 15 years later just to reminisce. I went over there. It's all done. All cleared out. The guy named Curtis, he was like, I'm sure, high 80s when he trained.
Oh, sure.
So he's not around anymore.
Just age thing.
It was cool, though.
There seems to be a kind of a thriving underground culture of boxing, and slightly less underground even still, but it's still kind of like not quite the same. Maybe I just don't move in the right circles or whatever.
I don't know, yeah.
We don't hear about enough of them.
Well, I was in college, and I just called Uppercut Gym and all these like random places I Google searched, and they answered and said, come on in, we'll train you for free. And I was like, what? And it was really cool. Like, they just gave back to the community, and there's a lot of African-American fighters and Native American fighters there. And then Wisconsin boy walked in.
Right.
You looked a little different.
I definitely did. But it was so cool.
And there's a couple of those currently where it's like they're deliberately in the neighborhood they're in, serving the people they're serving, which is pretty sweet. I try to follow them on Instagram. But again, like, I just learned of another gym that's like right next to a place I go to all the time. I had no idea there was a boxing gym there, you know. Just don't catch enough interest, I don't think. So let's talk about teaching second graders and then coaching adults in jiu-jitsu. Roughly the
pretty
same?
Pretty much the same.
Yeah. Coaching adults is so much easier. Oh, God.
Really?
Absolutely. Good. I mean, we're talking about 28 7-year-olds, and I'm teaching them things like history and science and traditional algorithms for mathematics. I come here teaching adults how to choke someone. It's so much better. Not better. Easier.
Is it because it doesn't actually matter? Like, those kids need to learn stuff, but you're trying to teach me a Darce choke. If I don't learn it,
not the end of the world.
It doesn't
actually. Well, one of the cool things is, like, if I have a student in jiu-jitsu and they're being a punk, I can just, like, go, I can just go triangle them or something. You know what I mean?
That's why it's easy.
Yeah.
Corporal punishment. Okay. Yes.
If we could reintroduce that, I'm just kidding. But no, the adults listen so well. They're paying to be there. They're in the moment. Second graders just want to party, you know, 24/7.
My second grader.
You're like, wait, I want to party 24/7.
Because I tend to be the guy where, like, you're watching the demonstration and, oh, anybody want to see it again? Nobody says anything. Anybody any questions? Nobody says anything. Any partner off? And I go, what are we doing? Yeah. I was staring right at him the whole time and I got nothing for you.
I think it's easier.
How do you like to teach? You ecological guy? Are you part of that cult? No, you're a Nogi cult. So are you part of the ecological
cult? No, it's all brand new. Drake has, I've had a few conversations with Drake, the head black belt instructor here at Hamel. And as he discusses it, I just feel like I know nothing about jiu-jitsu. Like the way he describes it and breaks it down and the philosophies and those middle spaces in between the positions, I just go, oh my, I know nothing. And I've been doing jiu-jitsu for 8 years now. So
yeah,
I'm learning.
You're here's the five steps guy. Apply it best you can when things go live. And he's talking some of those like positional, you know, minutia between steps one and two and two and three.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's scary for me who thought I had some jiu-jitsu figured out, you know, as a student and as an instructor. But then like when I watch him do a class or take a class or watch him do ecological warm-ups, I'm like, God. Or Drake sends Darren and I like a scope and sequence through a Google form, and I read it, and I like start Googling the words he's using, and I ask him clarification.
Ben will be like, "You're gonna have to explain what that means to me."
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, "What's that word?" What I mean, he's so smart.
I don't ask that question because I didn't care.
Yeah, yeah.
You just read it and just go do it.
I actually didn't read it.
You're one of those students.
Yeah.
You saw triangle. You're like, "All right, we're doing triangles.
We're doing triangles."
So yeah, I'm learning, and I'm. You know, anything new or something that you're not used to or confident with, it's scary. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to screw up and I don't want to disappoint Drake. But I'm trying to learn a new way to look at jiu-jitsu and train it. I'm sure it's fantastic and I've liked it so far, but I'm used to what we're used to, a technique or two or three, partner off, try it with different body types, drill it, maybe do a live game,
yeah, kick resistance, the mat. Yeah.
It may not come to a surprise to you, but Benny's a very good teacher. I mean, he does it for a living, but mm-hmm. when he's in front of people, his communication skills are amazing. And
Drake, too.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Let me just say it. You fucking lucked out.
I know.
Like, what is Drake a teacher?
No,
he's like a tech guy, isn't he?
He's a sales, I don't know, data guy. Yeah. Sales data guy.
Things that plug into walls and things. Who knows? Because, like, every time I've been in a class with him, or like been waiting around to roll instead of doing the class I should be doing. I think to myself that is a guy who is among one of the better natural teachers. And it's the phrasings. I think I've probably talked about this on the podcast, but it's the phrasings, the descriptions, the hokiness of some of the stuff that he says. You can just see it lighting people up and resonating with people in the room versus like, put your hand here and your hand here, go.
Yeah.
You know, that he couches things in a way that like personalizes the words a little bit. And it's a damn shame that he's a salesman, though I'm sure he does a good job because teaching and sales is kind of roughly the same idea. So
I'm sure he's great, whatever he does in his other job. Well, like you said, Matt, teaching is an art form. It's absolutely an art form. And I think like one thing that I bring to Hamel is I'm very confident in my teaching. I'm a way better, more confident teacher than I am a competitor, than I am a jiu-jitsu student. Like that's where I feel super comfortable and happy and confident. And it has to do with phrasing and word choice and eloquence and how you can give just the right amount, but not too much, not too little. Let them come back and ask questions and clarify. I mean, what's cool is I get to do here what I do have done for the last 17 years in the classroom.
Yeah, with a far less boring subject.
It's so cool.
History? Teaching them about like the ice wall and the mud flood and all that stuff.
No, not that stuff, but...
Oh, well, that's the Prophet Eddie Bravo coming out.
Yeah, I know. No conspiracy. No conspiracies in my classroom.
Tell me about an ecological warm-up. You mentioned Drake doing an ecological warm-up.
Well, so like Drake sent us a scope and sequence of his style.
Explain what that is for normal people, please.
Go ahead and take it.
I mean, it's amazing and overwhelming when I read it. I don't know about you, Darren, but when I read it, it's, you know, his beliefs within paragraph form and then some bullet points underneath and then the mini games and what you're trying to accomplish within those games, what the bottom guy, what the top guy does, where they want to get, what is a point, what is not a point, when do you reset, what do you reset to. So it's mini small games. You try to get past this knee shield and get chest to chest. If you're on the bottom, you're trying to get to close guard or half close. If you get to those positions, you win. Great. We switch positions. Back, forth, back, forth. That's my basic low-level understanding of what we've done so far. And then Drake, like, laid it out for us. And then I was like, oh, God, okay, this is my first time ever teaching it in this style. And then I come into Hamill and Drake's on the mat in his no-gi gear. And I'm like, oh, and he's here to watch me? Oh my God. Like, I haven't felt like that since my early days of getting observed by my principal way back in the day. So I walk in and Drake's there and I'm like, oh, God. But he was awesome and supportive. And I said, will you just model it so I can just watch you and then kind of copy what you're doing and what you're saying and how you're saying it. And he did the beginning of the class, and it was really cool just to see what he did and how he did it.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely not a that's maybe the other piece of what I think he does really well as an instructor, a teacher, or whatever, is he would never catch that negative feedback. It would be pitched positive, you know. Like, good teaching, good coaching is you never say, don't do that, right? You don't phrase things negatively. Yeah, you say, let's try our hand here instead of where it was.
For sure.
Sounds way better, right?
For sure.
And, you know, you got self-conscious people and people that have no idea, so they hear, don't do that, you know, and they're never coming back.
And what's cool about jiu-jitsu and education is let them screw up. Let them try to, you know, create their own path. And that goes with little kids to adults. And I think that matches with ecological view really well. It's like, make mistakes, get muddy, figure it out. That's the kind of little humans I want to keep helping build in my classroom, you know. Fail again, figure out a way to problem solve it, not just telling them what to think, not telling the grapplers what to think or my students what to think, letting them figure it out.
Seems exaggerated in jiu-jitsu because there's just bajillions of different ways to do stuff.
To fail.
Definitely to fail. Yeah. Like the different ways you can grab a wrist or grab a lapel, for God's sake. I mean,
well, someone moves an inch and everything changes.
It's totally different.
And that's what's dope about jiu-jitsu.
Too. You're not wrong. You're just doing it differently.
Right.
You maybe still failed. It doesn't mean you're wrong yet.
Right.
What do you call that? A synopsis? A scope and synopsis?
Scope and sequence.
Sequence.
It's kind of a teacher term, I guess.
Is that closely analogous to a curriculum?
So curriculum materials, that's what we call like the books, the text, the papers, the activities, the front loading structure, like the materials you use to set up your scope and sequence. Scope and sequence, what you want to teach, how you want to teach it, what you want students to master, how you can assess that.
Is that his term used or is that what you're describing?
I think that's me. Okay. But Drake.
I want him to have credit for Drake it. Will probably use, it sounds super cool.
He'll probably use even cooler, bigger.
Drake, what do you think about that? Oh, Drake, he's silent on the matter.
Just patch in a voice here. Do you do a curriculum as a teacher? Or are you good enough at it? You've been around long enough, you just freestyle it?
No, I'm a planner. I'm a structure guy. I have to be early to everything. I have to have things planned out. No, I don't. I try not to be rigid, because when I fail in a lesson or the group is not getting it, I have to be flexible enough to be like, okay, we're going to move on because I screwed that up. Or we're going to go part two tomorrow because I can see like I lost them. So I definitely have a plan for every single day of instruction and every single activity we do and every lesson. But 17 years in, I feel like I can really judge and flow and change and amend things along the way.
You work off an outline rather than a to-do list at this point.
Yep. Gotcha.
Before Drake came on and took over the curriculum, I was responsible for it. And if I didn't have it to Benny by Sunday, I was getting chirped on my text message. What are we doing?
Every time, every time. Hey,
he didn't have to coach for four more days. He could have just chilled out, but no, he wanted to make
sure. One of those, you're not wrong, but shut the fuck up, bro. Like, you're right. I feel you. But calm down.
I was like, Darren sees I'm committed, but really Darren's like, oh, this annoying son of a.
No, I loved it because it kept me accountable.
Is the mixed level, maybe this is a young enough program, we don't deal with too much of this, but is the mixed level coaching different than like all 7-year-olds?
No, absolutely not. I mean, in a class of 28, the levels within that is way outweighs the levels in jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean? Even though the levels are vast in jiu-jitsu, but like a white belt compared to a black belt in a class, I think is very comparable to my classroom of kids. I have kids who are still formulating sight words like was, and I have kids who are reading Harry Potter. You know what I mean? In the same class. Like, good luck trying to teach a lesson that hits them all where they're at.
Let's pause and have fun with this. What did you call that? A sight word?
Yeah.
What
sight
is
word
that
or high frequency word? Those words that come up all the time in our reading and writing.
Like motherfucker.
I hope not.
That one comes up a lot. I mean, I think.
I'm not gonna lie. I've seen kids drop an F-bomb in my class in writing once in a while, but no, not.
That's my world, I guess. Yeah.
That's a high frequency word for you.
Definitely. If you ever listen to this show, you know what it is.
Yeah. But no, like great, was, would, could, should, things like.
Like.
That. Like.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Sight word. I suppose. Yeah, you're dealing with human development, not skill development. I mean, you're dealing with both, right? Yeah. Right. But this is like, these are reasonably developed humans. Some of them more, you know, more than others. Right? Yeah. Right. That's interesting.
It's so cool. And that's what also makes it so difficult and makes it the other thing. That's why teachers burn out all the time and quit. So I'm not there yet.
You know, the funny thing about burnout is you talk to enough people, you realize that's every industry. Like you hear teachers and nurses.
Yeah.
Another one I heard a lot is athletic trainers. Because it's just your game time hours and all kinds of weird
also
stuff.
Also dentists.
Like that. But, and this is what I'm saying is, as you sit and think about it, oh, wait, every field is high burnout.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Maybe we got a bigger problem. Nobody's training jiu-jitsu after work to de-stress.
It helps.
Need more people in here.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be a beautiful place to stop. That was such a natural, like, anyway, show up to Hamill. We're not going to stop, though. You compete much, have you?
Jiu-jitsu? I haven't in a minute.
He's going to, though.
So my coach.
That was your boss saying that, by the way.
So my coach, I have a lot of coaches. Like.
Yeah, let's talk about that, too.
Okay.
Yeah. I want them all shouted out for sure, but
there's a lot.
There's a lot to take, I think, from gym hopping and bouncing around for any reason. Yeah. So
I'm a little bit of a Ronin like that. Is that the right term?
That's either the title of the episode, or I'm going to edit that sentence out. I'm not sure.
Sounds cool when you say that. I said too much now. The beginning. Where's Darren going? He's sick of this.
He's literally sees confused kids outside.
Just wandering around.
Yeah.
At the beginning of it, my wife got me like a 2-day free class like maybe 9 years ago at a place called Focus MMA. Anyone ever bring that place up? It was in Edina. Jeff Nelson.
I think that has come up actually.
I think Josh Lebsock, someone shouted him out on your podcast one of the times.
Yeah.
So I went there for like a free 2 classes, and there's this dude there named Josh Lebsock. He's got a huge eyeball tattooed across his abdomen. Huge eyeball.
That's right at the belly button.
The whole thing. So that was the first thing I noticed.
Yeah. The first time you met this dude, he didn't have his shirt on?
Yeah, he was like rolling.
Oh, all right, let's go.
And, I saw a muscular gopher wrestler guy come in, and I was like, whoa. This is I liked UFC. So it's my first time stepping on the mat. And I'm like, wow, this wrestler guy's going to kill this little long-haired skinny dude.
Yeah, the lore of wrestling pervades interest in sports. You're familiar with wrestling teams, and they're gnarly, and okay, this is going to be crazy.
And they're tough, and their ears are cool and scary looking. And then I watched Josh do whatever he wanted. He was a purple belt at that time. And, you know, 9 years ago, a lot of purple belts were running the classes, I feel like, around here.
Sure.
And that just blew my mind. And I was like, I got to learn this. And then it was really hard for 2 classes. And I'm like, I'm not tough enough for this, so I'm out. So that was it. That was like my beginning in jiu-jitsu. It was cool, but I was like, I'll go back on the basketball court. And then...
You get in trouble for accidental elbows in that sport.
Yeah.
Well, jiu-jitsu, I just keep rolling.
Jiu-jitsu, you just slap and bump and keep going. Yeah. So then I went... This is weird. This is a weird story. I mean, this is a weird journey in jiu-jitsu. So
okay, yeah.
I apologize for the weirdness.
Some of this is new to me, so
yeah, I was going to say, you probably know some of it, but not all. My sons and I loved American Ninja Warrior, so they were like, try to get on that show. I'm like, all right. Sent in a tape. Yeah. Of American Ninja Warrior.
Ninja Warrior was around in the era where tapes were still a thing. When did that start, dude? Anyway, sorry.
Well, now you have me second guessing. Maybe it was like a uploading. I think it was a tape. I don't know. Anyways, I applied for it. They called me back. My cell phone. Well, cell phones were there. So it said, I got a call that said California. on my cell phone. I was just, like, whoa, California's calling me.
Yeah, the whole state.
The whole state wants to talk to Benny.
And it was producers from American Ninja Warrior. And they're like,
that's cool.
We're going to pitch you to NBC or whatever channel it was. And they're like, in 4 weeks, you might be sent to St. Louis. And I was like, this is super cool. My kids and my students are going to think I'm super cool. So then I went to a place called Shoshinru, which is a Japanese jiu-jitsu place in Plymouth.
Right across from the Mickey D's.
Right across from Mickey D's and West Health. If you break something, you just drive right over right into the ER there. And Sensei Brian Combo, who's, I call him like my Minnesota dad, greatest guy ever. I think he's the highest ranking black belt Don. I don't know what any of that means in the United States. Mm-hmm. And he's a BJJ brown belt under Chris McCoon.
He is a BJJ guy. Cool. Okay. I've been meaning to reach out to some of the quote unquote traditional martial arts schools and stuff. And that one's so close to me.
And he's a great dude. You'd love him.
Yeah. We'll get him on.
So he was like, I was like, hi, can I come and just train in your facility for American Ninja Warrior? Like, what a stupid call that is. And he's like, absolutely.
Yeah.
So they're like doing their Japanese jiu-jitsu stuff. And I'm like working pull-ups and grip strength and trying to get like as strong and cardio ready just out of the blue. And I started watching some of their Niwaza, which is Japanese for ground fighting, I think, classes. And then I just started doing ground there. So that was the real start on my jiu-jitsu. The ground there was taught by a guy named Sean Yeakley that nobody knows. If you know, you know, though. He was an absolute monster on the mat. About 6'2", 240 of muscle, goatee, long ponytail. And he wrecked every human I have ever seen for my first 6 years on the mat, including me so many times. He was a four-stripe brown belt when I met him 9 years ago, and I think he had been a brown belt for 5 or 6 years even before that. So there's a weird story with that, how he never accepted his black belt promotion. But he
was also through McCune's, or is that the traditional jiu-jitsu?
Through McCune, and he went and lived in Japan and trained 35 hours a week. So he's a black belt in Taekwondo and Judo, and, I mean, unofficially, a very good black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And he was my main coach, like, for a long time.
Until he moved to Japan, or he had already been in Japan?
No, he had done his, like, earlier grappling work and lived there and taught English there or something and came back and just was wrecking everybody because he was almost training full-time. So he was my main Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu coach for a long time. But I was at a Japanese Jiu-Jitsu school, so there was no promotions, no anything, and I was starting to pick things up and starting to kill everyone there who would roll. They don't do live rolling there much. Mm-hmm. So then he introduced me to Fabio Moriscalchi, who you've had on your show.
Yeah.
So then I started doing some classes at Minnesota Kali Group with Fabio and Topper, and then that evolved into Akagi Jiu-Jitsu.
Right. So just a few years back, 4 or 5 years ago now,
probably. Yeah,
I 2019 guess. Or something, maybe.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Why didn't he accept the black belt?
His story to tell, I just think he and the instructors didn't see eye to eye on something with it.
Some kind of philosophical thing.
And like,
thing.
I believe Higan Machado was there and Sean did not go. So crazy.
Yeah.
But skill wise, oh my God.
Right.
Unbelievable.
And that honestly makes it more impressive or imposing or intimidating or something. Nah, I'll pass.
What? I know. That's pretty badass. Yeah. But also it's like, man, should he have? He doesn't have regrets.
Hmm.
You know, at least when he and I spoke a bit.
Yeah.
And he doesn't do jiu-jitsu anymore. No.
Good for him.
COVID hit him hard.
Fingers and stuff.
He found a way out.
Yeah.
Nobody leaves the cult.
Like Scientology. He got out.
Right.
No one knows where he is now. So he doesn't practice anymore, but he was like over COVID, he came to my house every week and he and I still at least got a session in being very scared of the whole world and taking temperatures and even wearing a mask, just him and I.
Yeah.
Kind of looks weird now, but we tried to be as responsible as
felt
possible.
Right.
Yeah. So he introduced me to Fabio. Fabio ended up promoting me to blue. Akagi went its separate ways. Topper became my head coach. You've had Topper on the show too. Mm-hmm. He is an absolute killer. Unbelievable practitioner, knows the answer to every single question. Like he runs an amazing school in Akagi. Like they're just because his expectations are so, so high. Like he makes you absolutely go through hell to earn your next strike.
Yeah, they actually test for belts.
They test.
It's not like we've rolled and I've been watching you and it's looking good. You got to like demonstrate it.
They do real demonstration and mastery of every position that they, you know, have on there. They have curriculum materials. They have lineouts that are very specific for blue belt, purple belt, brown, black. So got my blue and then purple from Topper. Yeah, it's like an hour of technique and you're dead, and then like an hour of gauntlet against like 10 rounds against 10 fresh guys.
Yeah,
horrible, but cool. Now
is that what you're going to be doing next weekend?
That's a great question. I don't know. So so I've been a purple belt forever, like over 4 years now, and my new head coaches are John Castaneda and Josh Frigin. Shout out to those two guys. They just started Academy Plymouth. You had those two guys. A
little closer to home, too.
Yeah. Yeah, super close.
Driving to Akagi multiple days a week from way out here.
It got tough. Yeah, with traffic. Of course it did, yeah. It was like 50 to hour minute drive.
It's one of the better open mats in terms of, on Sunday, their open mat in terms of, you know, getting different bodies and stuff. But it's killers, also, it's also like going to be 35 minute drive or whatever, too.
Yeah.
Great mat.
Yeah, absolutely. And then so John and Josh started this summer renting out through Combo at Shoshinryu. So we have a circle story here.
Bingo.
And Combo's like, these two guys are coming. You want to meet them? And so I was there at the first meeting with those two and nicest guys ever. I was like, okay, John Castaneda. I've seen him have wars in the UFC.
Yeah, I've heard the name. Yeah.
Those of you don't know, he's a UFC fighter, bantamweight UFC, close to maybe cracking the top 15 in the world. And I was like, I've seen him fight a lot. He's an absolute savage. This would be cool to meet him. I'm like, he's probably one of those alpha dicks, you know? Couldn't have been any more wrong.
Yeah.
Nicest, kindest, most positive dude ever. Good friend of mine now, and I've been training with him and Josh like ever since. So super lucky.
Josh is a murderer too, right?
Josh is a murderer too. Like
kind of lower profile,
because he's like a veteran army guy. Yeah. And
I was like, tell me some stories. He's like,
yeah, that's classified. Yeah, he's Green Beret and I think weapons specialist.
All
and he's
kinds
a,
of fancy.
He's a BJJ brown belt. So is John. So what Darren was alluding to, John gets his black belt in 6 days. So that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh just had his first kid last week. So shout out to him. He became a dad.
And which one's more?
Both. Yeah. A black belt and a kid. That's very cool. Yeah. Very important. Josh texted me and the text message said, I did a thing. I opened it up and it was a baby. I'm like, bro, you know, that's a big thing.
Your wife did a thing, bro.
Calm down. Yeah. You had a part in it. Yeah.
You got a knock on the head when you passed out, homie.
Yeah. So his life is now forever changed. He's got a baby. That's awesome.
Terrifying. You guys have kids, right?
Yeah. I've got two adults.
It's terrifying, right?
It is. And it doesn't, it escalates.
Yeah. it's another process to black belt.
Exactly. It keeps getting worse.
What a nice way to put it. Your kids are like, oh, thanks a lot.
So many episode titles. It keeps getting worse. That's good. How's the program going over there? It seemed like they had a strong start, like, you know, right off the bat, like 15 members or something.
Yeah, I think it's going great. They hired a Muay Thai coach now, too. So they're doing, like, striking and jiu-jitsu in the mornings and then jiu-jitsu at night. They have big plans, like John and Josh, once they can, go to a big space, and they want MMA classes on Saturdays. I want to bring in a wrestling coach, and, you know, so the academy, they tend to go big.
Yeah.
The headquarters is a huge gym here, so... But, you know, growing, it's been fun and cool. I've been able to train 8 minutes away from my house now at two gyms I love, with Hamel BJJ Club and then Academy Plymouth. And I've been lucky enough that Josh and John asked me to instruct at times there too. So I substitute, kind of teach there when they need me. And then I got a Wednesday night here. So I'm just, it's super lucky and it's turned out really, really well. And, you know, Darren's one of my coaches. Drake, I have...
What do I coach you in?
Every time we roll, how about...
Sprawling practice?
Yeah. No, I mean, I've learned from Darren, Drake, John, Josh, and then I have this awesome foundation with Sean Yeakley and then Topper. I'm just so grateful. Like, all these just great minds and great grapplers and, more importantly, great humans. Like, there's so many great humans in jiu-jitsu. Like, I don't always maybe like jiu-jitsu, but I love jiu-jitsu. That could be another title of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're getting good at those titles. Yeah. chapter titles in the memoir. I think that's the real evolution of jiu-jitsu in general, is the amalgamation of all the different opinions and ideas and techniques and approaches and, quote unquote, I'm not a big fan of the phrase, but Ronin types are leading the way on that. Like, by virtue of just necessity of life, you've bounced around a lot. So you've seen a lot of different coaching styles, a lot of training styles, a lot of different versions of the technique.
I
don't know if that
says something bad about me, though. I was trying to be self-reflective.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's like,
I think it's a positive thing all the way around.
I think even if somebody is a gym hopper because they tend to have drama, let's say, mm-hmm. and I'm not saying that's you, but let's say somebody, you know, has been 4, 5, 6 different gyms or whatever,
yeah,
because of whatever. It isn't just like, oh, I got transferred for work or whatever. The net result is a positive in terms of their exposure to ideas and approaches, especially if they're going to then coach, which is kind of my point, is like bringing a more diversified, malleable approach to then teaching other people jiu-jitsu. That's a bigger revolution than will it be no gi or gi.
Yeah,
the outfit doesn't fucking matter as much, I think, as the expanse of knowledge that's coming to a 5-year-old kid who's just signing up for their first jiu-jitsu class. Like, by the time they're 18, the wild variety of styles of coaching and teaching and then practicing jiu-jitsu they'll see compared to the nothing you and I know about it will be amazing.
I think you nailed it. I think that's a huge perk of my weird journey with many different head coaches. The collection of styles. I mean, everyone's so different. At Academy Plymouth, like, John is wrestling background, professional MMA fighter in the highest, like, you know, highest league on the planet. So my roles with John couldn't be any more different than my roles with Josh. You know, like, Josh is super chill, like the lockdown. There's no holes, and he's just strong and deliberate. John, it's a wild ride, and I'm just trying not to get any scrambles because he's unbelievable with the scrambles. But
it's like riding an air.
Make him put a jacket on.
Yeah, I know. Believe me, that would be a very big difference.
Just a belt. Something
I made to that. Grab. I made that joke to John once. He's like, I like to roll in the gi, so. He's probably a killer in the gi too. So yeah.
Well, I'm sure
he's not
going to
make it any better.
But in his head, he was thinking, yeah, "Sure,
exactly.
Come on,
yeah, test me out,
yeah,
old man." So yeah, he. We've been doing all no gi at so far. Every grappling thing at Academy Plymouth is no gi. They just don't have a gi system in yet, and because they're building and they have a smaller base of a lot of noobs, it hasn't been put in. Yet it will get there. At Hamel, really strong gi section, and we have a lot of these guys that have been training with Darren and I at the shed, at the open barn that we started off with in the summer, that have been training like 5 to 6 days a week since then, who have like 2, 3, 4 stripes on their white belt already. It's really cool to see that progression.
Yeah.
Favorite or best martial arts movie, or we'll broaden it and say sports movie, since you're a sports dork.
Jeez, I have to go first, or just
it doesn't matter.
Darren, you go first. So
nobody's listening.
I'm a big
anyway.
I'm a big movie guy and documentary guy.
This is easy. Win-win.
A movie called Win-Win.
Mm-hmm.
Is it wrestling? I would assume
it is.
Never heard
or
of
cycling.
It.
It's I mean, wrestling isn't the point of the movie, but it's part of the movie.
Yeah, arm wrestling isn't the point of over the top. It's a movie about child custody battles, but we're in it for the truck driving and the arm wrestling.
It's classic.
Win-win? I've never heard of it.
I've never heard of it.
That's pretty good. It's very good.
Better than Vision Quest?
Which is also as far as like the quality of a movie, yes. The quality of the wrestling, yes. Like the lead... he's not the lead actor, but the kid that's kind of the protagonist in the movie is an actual wrestler, like a high level wrestler.
It helps a lot.
Yeah, So the wrestling action is really good, but the movie's really good.
You didn't have Matthew Modine talking about losing 30 pounds across the movie, but yeah, looking exactly the same the whole time.
Exactly.
Dropping down to 68, huh? When's that going to start?
My turn?
I don't know. It's all good.
I have a list.
Unofficial Little list. Giants, Sandlot.
Well, for sure. I didn't even think about
all
those
two. All the kids' those sports movies.
Those are super classic. How about Blue Chips? You ever hear that?
Yeah. Have I ever heard of that? Of course, brother. Just because I don't have the gray you guys have doesn't mean I don't.
Blue Chips is up there. Hoosiers, obviously. Absolute classic.
Gene Hackman, baby.
So good.
Yeah.
Choke, documentary, Hicks and Gracie. Mm-hmm. Pumping Iron. I'm a lifting guy.
Let's get serious.
Love it.
That's the best scene in any movie ever. Your boy is squatting 405 for reps, and Arnold's sitting over there going, let's get serious.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, this is not serious.
Is that when the dude like passes out after, too?
Like, yeah, he like lays down. He's like clearly of set to failure or whatever. It might not have been 405. Anyway.
Probably more of those guys.
Meathead sneaking through. No, I think it was less.
Let's talk about that for a second, if we can. How is Darren stronger than me?
I'm not.
When I've been lifting for 20 years. 6 days a week, Darren grabs my wrist, and he now owns my wrist for the rest of the role.
Did you wrestle?
Absolutely not. I suck at wrestling.
As even despite your years, I'm going to say the resident expert in moving objects designed to be lifted.
Yeah,
it is dramatically insufficient to moving a responding organism. Shall we say, like, I have moved
or resisting organism.
Thank you. Yeah. I've moved serious fucking objects. Very, very impressive feats of strength over the years.
You look like it.
Not anymore. And that's only to support your point. Like, what you see is a degraded version of what was. And one of my strengths in the sports I did, strongman and arm wrestling and stuff like that, was the strength of my hands. And amongst people who've grappled, it almost doesn't matter. Almost doesn't matter.
I wanted to ask you and Darren because I know you're a weights guy and trainer. Mm-hmm. Darren is a lifelong wrestler, wrestling coach, as well as a Masters World Champion. Can't forget
Blue Belt.
That. Blue Belt. Can't forget that. So I thought you two would be the best resources for this question. Why is Darren stronger than me?
Wrestling. The answer is wrestling.
Not stronger. I do have a very good grip.
It's force, but the proper application of the force. Like you can deadlift 500 pounds and I put a 250 pound Atlas stone in front of you and it's not going to budge. And you go, oh, fuck. I thought I was strong. Well, you are, but
it's one of those big spheres.
Yes. It's the balls they used to have in front of Target. You'd go up and jokingly try to lift it. Yeah. Strong is one thing, but the shape of the thing and how it's moving and what direction it's going to move in is just gigantically different. That's why you take a power lifter, they won't automatically be a good Olympic lifter. And you take either of those guys and it might not transfer to trying to hold somebody down.
That makes sense.
And vice versa. It's not like a superiority of wrestling, but it's just the specificity of the application for sure.
I can bench press 180 pounds.
That probably puts you in the 1% of the world, for the record.
Actually, I don't know if I could do that. Probably a lot less.
But you could grab the bar and bend it with your hands if you wanted.
You wrestle the bar.
You could take it down easily.
And I mean, and that's like if it comes time to grab a hold of something and clamp down and just hold it still. Like I can keep Darren with a pant grip and a collar grip in like knee shield or half guard really, really well.
Right. I can attest to that.
Yeah. Recently, we've done it a couple times. Can I fucking do anything there? You know, is there a sweep? Maybe, maybe not, probably not, right? Like, clamp down is fine, but that's also not what fighting is.
Yeah.
You know, he's just going to be like, all right, cool, keep clamping.
Yeah.
I'll stall too, bro.
Yeah.
And then I'll see my spot and take it. You know, like the there's something about wrestling and just constant dynamic thick bar work, we would call it. Like I've lifted a lot of thick, heavy handled dumbbells, but they're not fighting back. They're not twisting. They're not moving. You know, they're not getting slippery and sweaty and whatever. So it's a whole different thing than just a different skill set, you know?
Yeah.
Just like a judo person would have limitations against a wrestler and vice versa, or even against a jiu-jitsu person on the ground. You know, it's just not as refined of a skill set and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I found it out the hard way with, you know, toppers like 140 pounds. And I was like, I'll just throw them off me. It doesn't work.
That's what they want you to do.
I know.
The little guys want you to do that.
Yeah.
Because they're going to end up on your back.
Or anywhere he chooses.
Yeah. When you were talking about him earlier, I was like, he's the worst kind of high-level jiu-jitsu. Women and small dudes are the worst once they're good because they're the best.
I was going to say, they say a coach who's smaller than you is ideal because they have had to, their whole lives, figure out to get to where they want to get against people bigger. Yeah.
Nothing worked accidentally ever.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like a hip bump sweep from closed guard. I'll accidentally hit that. And then I roll with the big dude, like a big Nick, 330 pounds. And it's like, oh, I don't even understand how to do that. I hit it all the time, but it's not real.
Right.
You know, well, if you're a tiny person or a woman or a tiny woman, you don't get the option of doing it wrong and having it work. So it makes sense he's a fucking murderer.
Yeah. That's how my role with Marcus was recently, too. I heard of Marcus Bedore. Is that how you say his last name?
Mm-hmm.
You know, seeing that he's just teacher and instructor and competitor, and accepted a role with him at a seminar here, and I felt like he could have put a pacifier in my mouth. That's how he treated me.
Did he happy baby guard you? He just puts his elbows on the floor and his palms on the side of his knees and just continues to spin around.
I don't remember because I blocked everything out. It was, yeah. I'm trying to forget that ever happened.
He's got four hands. He doesn't have feet. Yeah, he has
everything
hands
I did.
On his
he looked
legs.
At me. I think he yawned maybe. And then, then passed my guard and submitted me, I think, three or four times in one round. And yeah. I left without my soul.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you know, you don't take anything away from someone who's trained hard and practiced hard and had some natural skill. But he's 4'6", 110 pounds. He didn't have a choice but to get good.
Yeah.
Nothing worked in the beginning, I'm sure. Little jerk.
Yeah. It was awesome and horrible. And that's another thing about jiu-jitsu. Builds you up and then it destroys you over and over, back, forth, back, forth. You get confidence and then you get your soul taken. And that's what's cool. One of the cool things.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
I feel like I talk too much. I want to hear
Me
more.
Me too.
You were thinking the same
Darren thing. Darren nailed it.
Darren.
I talk too much and you talk too much and he was perfect. And
Drake didn't even...
Drake really provided nothing.
Drake's mic isn't working, I guess, today.
That's probably my fault.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank
you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Thanks, Benny.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of the Pohata Podcast. And hey, if you're a regular listener, head on over to the Pohata Podcast on Instagram, where amongst the ridiculous memes, you'll find a link to the merch shop and be able to keep up with the disorganized going-ons of the show. And hey, before you go, here's a little preview of an upcoming episode.
Because I pretty much train every day. So before, but thankfully now not anymore. So I was working at Boston Scientific, and I was on the 3-12 schedule, Saturday to Monday. So on Saturdays and Sunday after work, I would have to try and, you know, get a few guys together who would be willing to, you know, get working in the evening on the weekends, which is not, you know, it's kind of hard because everyone's, you know, either got a life going on or they got plans, you know, like just there's a lot of things going on. But luckily Reggie and Darian would be game, and Kuchlong too would be game and come in, hold pads and shoot the shit a little bit, kind of not as just kind of casual pad holding, but still something to do.